This is Susan Robb for Teachers for a New Era. I'm talking with Ashley Anderson Zantop from Trudy Corporation, a company that has imprints Soundprints and Studio Mouse. Soundprints was started in 1996 and Studio Mouse in 2001. Trudy Corporation started as a toy company. And so Ashley, thank you for talking with me. Tell me a little bit about your background with the company.
Sure. My background is actually both in early child development. I went to school at the University of Michigan for undergrad, and really had a number of loves and just couldn't choose, so became virtually a professional student. I got a BA in elementary education with a major in language arts and a minor in social sciences, and concurrently got a separate BA in English literature from the School of Literature, Science, and the Arts, and a teaching certification, and began my sort of my professional career post-university in a teaching capacity as an educator, and had a little bit of a hard time reconciling that with the fact that I was raised on publishing. My family started a publishing business, a small niche market publishing business, which was really a joy for me to work for, work very hard for, maybe for very little money, for many years. And that was really something that I enjoyed. And ultimately, for me, children's publishing is the best of both of those worlds and helps me pull together my love of literature with my love of doing good things for children and trying to make things that are relevant and important to them. And so Trudy Corporation has been the home for me when I set out to sort of realize that that was my mission, that made the most sense, that let me do those things, and also let me work in a way that allowed me to really stay heavily involved in books that were going to be targeted for use in schools and libraries, which is important to me, as well as books that are going to be sold as fun sort of edutainment type of titles. So we get to do a little of both here, and that's really important.
Now, people may know Soundprints from the Book and Plush. A lot of the it's been around for a long time. And what do you think about the book and not a movement, but something that has been increasing and has moved into a lot of new areas?
Sure. The Book Plus category, you know, is what it's called in the industry, is a category that I think goes through periods of popularity and then less popularity, depending on what kinds of components people are most interested in or what is most trendy or sort of on point for the moment. But for us, really, the idea is that, you know, every child learns differently, and children have different strengths and abilities. And sometimes one of the keys to getting emerging readers really into reading and really hooked is to find other ways to make a book relevant to them. You know, a plush toy on the face of it, a soft toy, cuddly and cute, is great for attracting attention, but it's also a great tool to use in role play, which helps kids internalize what they're reading and increase their reading comprehension. And, you know, even if they're not at a reading stage yet, even if they're pre-readers and they're being read to, the plush toy helps keep them involved in the story and helps them identify with the character. And so it's one of the many ways to kind of bring books alive for kids. And I think that is fundamentally important to helping children develop a long-lasting love of reading and trying to make that reading relevant to whatever they're doing in their lives.
Now, you also have here partnerships with places like the Smithsonian. What role do the partnerships play in your publishing?
The Smithsonian is a wonderful institution to work with. We are a licensee of the Smithsonian Institution. We have been for about 20 years. An institution like the Smithsonian is really an entity that allows us access to experts in fields of natural science or social science or history that help us develop, you know, the best possible materials that we can for children. The books that we create in conjunction with the Smithsonian are go through an extremely heavy vetting process. Every stage of the development is scrutinized by not only our staff but the curators and the staff at the Smithsonian Institution. So it really provides us maximum creative and factual input and lets us produce a product that we feel good about and lets us create titles and assemble content that we think are going to be really good for kids.
Now, you also do book and audio. Can you describe that area to me, and has it changed for you?
Sure. Yes, there are some things about book and audio which have changed dramatically, and there are some things that have stayed very much the same. Kids are still kids. So I think, for again, similarly to the issues that I described with regard to a toy and reading related specifically to a toy, audio is another way of interacting with books, and for kids who are better audible learners than visual learners, sometimes that's a very valuable tool. For kids who have learning differences, having the audio read along for a title can make all the difference in terms of their success and their ability to internalize and comprehend the content and move forward at the same pace as other students. And so that's important to us as well, to provide that as an opportunity for those children. Also, for kids who love to read and have, you know, grown to love reading, studies show that it's important that kids hear adults read, hear the cadence of their voice and the way they pronounce words, especially words that might be new or interesting or difficult for children. And it also, the audio is enhanced, that we produce is enhanced by either music or sound effects, and it also is another way of bringing a book alive so that we get as full an experience and immersion in the subject matter as possible. And that is something that I think is important for developing sort of a lifelong love of reading and literacy.
What's the designated age for these, although I know that can really vary in terms of use?
Yes, there's no question that that's true, but what we do does vary in age. We have some titles and product lines that are specifically designed for toddlers to, you know, beginning preschool, and then we have some titles that are designed preschool to potentially grade one, and then some titles that are designed solidly for lower elementary, and some that are designed for mid-elementary levels. And there's certainly no question that the reading levels can differ tremendously from the listening levels. So, and that's one of the things that we think is great about audio, is that it allows kids access to content that if they were left to read on their own devices would just be too difficult for them, too sophisticated. But when they're allowed to listen, they really can internalize and understand some pretty interesting concepts. I mean, and natural science is a great way to do that because of children's natural interest in animals, the animal kingdom, and the natural world. And having allowing kids to reach for goals in terms of developing vocabulary and understanding concepts related to, you know, animals that they see outside every day, those types of things. That's a great way in terms of building their listening skills, which in turn helps to build their reading skills in the long run.
What about the technology in that area? Has that changed for you over time?
Certainly. We do find, as shocking as it might be in 2008, we do find that there are still school systems out there that not only do use but prefer to use tapes, cassette tapes, traditional old cassette tapes, and so we actually do stock those. We do find more and more, of course, that many markets are switching to CDs and even beyond. You know, for us it's important to stay relevant and stay current with technology, so we're actually involved in a big push right now to develop a well-rounded stable of digital content so that the audio materials that we produce are available not only on cassette or not only on CD but also in downloadable format, and that's a big initiative for us in the coming years.
Do you have to customize in ways, or you're just offering strands of product in different forms in your catalog? So what I mean is, with schools, do places come to you if they have a big enough buy that you have to actually do things specific to area needs?
We offer customization in many markets around the world. It does require that there be a certain sort of minimum critical mass to make it worthwhile. Otherwise, the project could potentially be unaffordable if there aren't the basic economies of scale to allow us to maximize production optimization in terms of costing. But we do customization. We do that for many markets around the world. We publish primarily in English for the United States, but also in Spanish, and we publish Spanish titles in other countries around the world, Spain and throughout Latin America, and also other languages as well. And being able to customize for local area needs is a wonderful thing. We just have to make sure that the economics work so that the materials that we're creating are accessible to the people that we want them to be accessible to be.
I also noticed that you have an Around the World series.
That's one of my personal favorites. The Make Friends Around the World series, I think, is particularly relevant in today's day and age in terms of geopolitical and social events. And Make Friends Around the World is a series that we take painstaking care to commission authors and illustrators who are actually from the featured country. This series really only has one common feature, and that is that each title focuses on a snapshot of the life of a child in a particular country. And although through the story that unfolds in each title, we see all the unique experiences that child might have in their culture, one of the things that I think is universal that you find as you read through the series is that even though we all have very interesting and unique cultures and traditions that are, you know, very worth celebrating, there are many ways in which we're all very similar. We all have very similar basic needs and basic wants in terms of friends and family and tradition and home. And you know, that's one of the things that's wonderful about the series. In addition, the audio component is great because it gives us some access to a great story, well told, but then also some factual back matter that allows us to take a look at a glossary that might have some words from the featured country's language, whatever that might be, and really gives readers a chance to kind of get immersed in that environment. For even if it's just for a few minutes, to really participate in that environment and visualize what that experience might be like.
And another area that I had seen quite a bit of is character-driven components on your list.
Right. There's no question that on our Studio Mouse list, which is a list that's sold very predominantly at retail versus some of our other items which are sold in other channels like schools and libraries and those sorts of things. On our Studio Mouse list, we do have a number of licensed characters. We are happy to be able to feature Disney characters and Sesame Workshop characters. The idea with that list is that we are looking to the popularity of those characters to help draw kids into a book that is going to, even if they don't realize this, is going to leave them a little better than it found them, is going to provide them a great opportunity to interact with some entertaining content, but also to learn something at the same time. Even if they're not quite aware that they're learning something, some things are very obvious, whether it's, you know, maybe it's concepts like counting and quantitative skills, but sometimes the concepts that are being reinforced are sort of embedded in an interesting and entertaining storyline, so children may not even realize that they're actually building skills they're going to need to succeed in school and beyond.
And one last question, both for your company and in general with children's books and also with multimedia, what kinds of trends do you see and what interests you particularly?
I do think that globally that publishers are beginning to recognize the fact that books and traditional books, physical books, and digital media can coexist, that one doesn't necessarily negate the other. They are not mutually exclusive types of media, and that we need to stay relevant with the way that children interact with media around the world. And being able to do that allows us the flexibility to deliver content to them in ways that are important and relevant for the ways they live their lives. And, you know, that means that we have to change some of the ways that we've done things traditionally, but it also helps us figure out what's special and unique about traditional publishing and find a way to keep those traditions alive as well.
And it is storytelling in the long run.
Storytelling is always the key.
Well, thank you very much, Ashley. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome, Susan. It was my pleasure.